Welcome to another That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino, and PJ's back. PJ, it's good to see you.
Got a little break.
You did. You needed it.
Yeah, got a little sun.
You got a tan. You got a sharp haircut.
A big tan line, too, yeah. You got a nice little tight
haircut. I've got my summer cut going on. I mean, you know, it's... Other than that, I'm pretty much a slob right now. You know, I mean, it's the off season. We're on vacation. I miss the Premier League. I feel like Ron Burgundy, you know, when he gets fired and he's got a huge beard. I've got a huge beard right now, and I'm just chugging milk in the sun waiting for the Premier League to come back. One thing that made us feel a little good, though, that made us feel like it's not too far away is the fixtures were announced. Premier League fixtures were released, I think that was yesterday.
This morning.
Oh, it was this morning.
This morning, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Brand new, fresh, yeah.
So, fresh take, fresh look at some of the fixtures right out of the gate. There's some big games. Spurs-Chelsea, that's going to be at Wembley, right? That's going to be in their new digs. So that's going to be an interesting one. The reigning champs going up against Spurs in their new house. 8:26 Liverpool-Arsenal. Battle for top four right there. And obviously Arsene Wenger stays. Do they pull off some of these remarkable signings they're going after? They're still in the race for Kylian Mbappe.
So is Liverpool, depending on who you're listening to.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think either of them land that player, so we could solve that one right there. And then on 9-9, Manchester City, Liverpool, 10-14, Liverpool, Manchester United. It's just good to see those fixtures.
The key thing I always like looking at the ones at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And we get excited about them, and some of them are on April 14th, Tottenham City, April 28th, Man United, Arsenal, and then May 5th, Chelsea, Liverpool.
Chelsea,
but the
Liverpool.
Thing is, we just never know until we get to that point in the season if those games will be meaningful.
Well, let's hope so. We thought that we circled some of the Manchester United fixtures towards the end of the season, especially the Manchester Derby and
the Arsenal game.
And the Arsenal game, thinking those were going to be huge title deciders. And whoops, got that one wrong.
But it worked out for Jose in the end, I guess.
It did. He got two trophies. We'll see. Speaking of transfer window, they're going to try to have a big one as well. They've already missed out on Antoine Griezmann, although, you know, hard to really say they missed out on him. It seems because of the travel ban being upheld. Did I say travel ban? Freudian slip. The transfer ban.
That's what happens in the off season.
Yeah. The travel ban has a result in the courts as well, but we won't get into that one. The transfer ban for Atletico Madrid was upheld, which meant Griezmann called it a dirty move to leave them at that point where they couldn't bring anyone in to replace him. Maybe I'm just a cynic, and I argue that if Manchester United had the season that Real Madrid had, I think Griezmann might have been more tempted to leave, but we'll see. Supposedly a gentleman's agreement between Manchester United and Atletico Madrid to do that move next summer, although everything changes in a year. So we'll see what happens there. Anyway, before I get into the three topics today, let me just jump through some reviews. And thanks again, Dad Potters, for all the reviews. They're so good. I sit and I read them sometimes in bed, and my wife catches me giggling and just wonders what's wrong with me. And this is what's wrong with me, because these are funny. Here's one from PGH fan. He said, "I guess it's nice to hear your voice, Kyle, but we can't see that coif of lovely hair on the internet radio. This doesn't matter much for some pods like Men in Blazers. Ouch, because who wants to see a couple of bald heads?" I love those bald heads. I mean, you're pretty good. Everyone's pretty good, and they try. I'm going to take a sip of hot tea and spit it into everyone's mouth. Oh, it will burn me, but it will burn you too. Shell art is over. That's a very abstract reference, and I actually haven't watched in a while, but I used to watch all the time, Portlandia. If you haven't watched Portlandia, go. Is it on Netflix? It's got to be on Netflix.
I think it might be. I'm not sure.
Netflix, iTunes. Just go find it and start from the beginning. Put a burn on it. And then another review from High Watt owner, Kyle. Love the pod. I like to think that you're a footballing Willy Wonka, but perhaps you're just an Oompa Loompa. That's probably more right. Next to Rebecca. Regardless, the pod is giving some great insight. Glad I found the golden ticket. I got a golden ticket. Thanks for listening, High Watt owner, and thanks for listening, all you Tad Potters, and what we got for you this week. Our three great topics that are all U.S. men's national team focused after the huge two World Cup qualifiers we just witnessed over the past weeks. The topics are Christian Pulisic, boy wonder, the kid's a star. We're going to get into that. Next, U.S. men's national team. We're going to take a look from 30,000 feet and talk about Bruce Arena, his tenure, how it compares to Jurgen Klinsmann's, as everyone wants to do, and just it's been a short reboot, but we're going to give him a grade so far. And then first, let's get into, which has to do with Bruce Arena, a little bit of a tactical conversation about what he did at Azteca. So if you go back and listen to the pod and listen to, was that my first That's a Dive where I talked about Bruce Arena? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go back and listen to the first one, the first That's a Dive where I get into Bruce Arena a little bit. And at that point, it was because he was just announced as the replacement for Jurgen Klinsmann. And what I said back then, PJ, is I said, safest pair of hands. Safest pair of hands to take over a group in last place in the Hex because no one has more experience qualifying for a World Cup with the United States, and no one has a better understanding of the ever-changing landscape in American soccer. As Major League Soccer grows, as it changes, as it evolves, as more and more players go over to Europe, as this whole pool of players just evolves, becomes deeper, becomes more complex, Bruce Arena's the guy that can break that code. And what has he done? Well, he's completely turned things around. They went from last place to now they're in third on 8 points, which includes a very impressive draw down in Mexico, Mexico City at the Azteca. So let's kind of start there. Right before the game, the lineups get announced, and he's playing a back three. And based on what happened with the U.S. team in Columbus with a back three, I think everyone flinched and winced a little bit. And, you know, the discussion immediately started with Bruce Arena. Not only was it switched to back three, but it was also personnel decisions, making a ton of changes.
Seven.
We made seven changes.
And from Bruce, the Trinidad game.
Bruce asked before the game on the changes. He said, I was close to nine changes yesterday, but fell back to seven. To repeat the lineup we played on Thursday, we would have struggled big time in the altitude. So short recovery obviously forced some of these. But there was another thing that forced his personnel changes, and I'm going to get into that a little more when we get on to the Jurgen Klinsmann side of things and compare and contrast these two U.S. or the last two U.S. managers. The Tim Howard one is the only one I was a little bit – I understand the thought. The thought is he's coming back from injury. You know, you want to make sure you protect him, but he's been playing regularly and also playing with short recovery in Major League Soccer. So I'm not really sure that holds a lot of water.
Do you think this might be part of a trend we've seen recently with goalkeepers, more so in club teams where, for example, in 2014, Real Madrid had Diego Lopez, I think, playing the league games and Casillas in Champions League, and then Barcelona did the same thing the next year with Ter Stegen and Bravo. We saw it with Manchester United this year with De Gea playing the league games and then Romero playing in the Europa League games. Is it some? Do you think? I know with country it's different, mm-hmm. but could there be some sort of rotation he can do with these two if he thinks they're equal, or is that, or does he need to pick a number?
Yeah,
clear cut number one.
If he thinks they're equal, I'm not against rotation, but they're not equal. So no offense to Brad Guzan, yeah. I think Brad's a terrific goalkeeper. I think he is a great understudy and is the best option to replace Tim Howard if Tim Howard's not available. But when Tim Howard's available, he's number one. He's number one, and he should have started that game. Brad did well. He performed well in that game. So obviously, you know, it's kind of a moot point, and it's not worth really diving too deep into this one. But that's the only big decision that kind of surprised me a little bit is, you know, and Tim Howard in the World Cup qualifier before that came up with a few really big plays, mm-hmm. a few really big saves. So that one was confusing, but what was interesting is everyone was breaking this down, and if you read through Twitter feeds and people in the soccer community you follow, there was a lot of people that were skeptical and critical before the game started about this decision from Bruce, and from people that I respect a lot, you know, Matt Doyle, who's MLS analyst. If you don't follow him, he's got great takes on the tactical side of the game. You know, a lot of people were questioning if this was going to work, and I thought it worked perfectly. Now, It was sort of called a 3-4-3, right? I mean, and that was initially the idea of how it was going to be rolled out. We all knew at Azteca it was never going to look like that. And, you know, sometimes with formations, I think we get a little bit out of control, and we spend too much time focusing in on a formation that only really shows itself before the ball is kicked off at the beginning of the game. I mean, formations are really a blueprint. And listen, they're important. It's important to break them down. It's important to understand what the strategy is. But this lineup ended up looking like sort of a 5-2-2-1 or you know,
a 5-4-1.
A 5-4-1 more often than not. Bruce's line about that was hilarious, where he said, listen, as long as it adds up to 10, everything's all good.
That goes to your point, though, about tactics, that we make such a big deal about it, but in the end, I think he's kind of saying there, it doesn't really matter as long as it works, because everybody's on the same page, and I think that's probably the point.
Well, and this goes back to my first podcast, when I talked about Bruce Arena. One of the reasons I thought it made so much sense to bring him back at this point is because he simplifies things. I mean, that's who he is. It's so clear what he wants to do. And when they set up, it was clear what the strategy was. The strategy was to absorb. The strategy was to take Mexico off of their rhythm, to push them into wide channels, to make it difficult to play between the lines, crowd the center of the field, and force wide battles, force one-on-ones. It was Yedlin off the right, right, and Villafana.
Beasley.
Bees. Yeah, that's right, Bees. Oh, my God. I still can't believe Bees is doing it. I mean, absolutely amazing. So Bees, who took a couple knocks early on in that game, it was Bees and it was Villafana in the Trinidad Tobago game. So it was Bees. And basically, they were there to offer some support in the attack and offer some pace and ability to join in and create issues once they won the ball and were able to hold and get forward. But really, they were there to be great one-on-one defenders and offer help to the back line. And it worked. I mean, Mexico were so frustrated. If you see the shots that they took during that game, the majority of them were from bad angles, were low-percentage shots, and that's all you can hope for. And also, the early goal obviously gets them off of their game a little bit. So I just thought, you know, Bruce Arena, some might have been surprised by him throwing out a back three because he's sort of thought of as this anachronistic 4-4-2 guy. And I remember talking with a few people before the game, and I was referencing a game I played in the Confederations Cup with the U.S. against Cameroon. And we played a 4-4-2, and I played in the middle of the park with Chris Armas. And it was in the context of discussing Christian Pulisic. Where will he fit? Where is he best used? And I want to see him as a number 10. And the criticism or I guess the skepticism was thrown out that in a 4-4-2, he's got to sit a little bit too deep. And in the Trinidad and Tobago game, he played in a 4-4-2 next to Michael Bradley. And yeah, at times he was inhibited. At times he had a little too much defensive responsibility. But that's the 4-4-2, what we've been the best in for the United States over the years. And Bruce went back to that, the tried and true. But it shouldn't surprise people that he throws out a back three because he can switch things up. I mean, he is pragmatic, not in a conservative way, but he's pragmatic in what personnel do I have? What are all their best positions? And who's the opponent? Okay, here's how we have to set up. I mean, that's really how his mind works. And you know, some critics of Bruce Arena will say, well, moving forward, one of the things they liked about Jurgen Klinsmann, I'll dive deeper in this in the next topic, was one of the things they liked more about Jurgen Klinsmann was the ambition to be more than just a team that's difficult to play against and offer a game plan that only looks at the strengths of the United States and tries to be on the front foot, tries to be free-flowing, tries to be attacking-minded, build out of the back, all of the things that the greatest teams in the world do. But if they're not ready for it, if you don't have the personnel for it, if you're going up against an opponent that will expose a lot of your weaknesses, don't do it. And so, you know, that's why I think Bruce Arena is the right guy for right now, because we needed stability. The United States were spiraling a little bit, were actually in jeopardy of I know it was at the beginning of the hex, but we're in jeopardy of, they didn't get big results in the next couple of games of struggling to qualify for Russia 2018. So I think the if you look at the games, I mean, not only the wins, the points, and climbing up the table and getting in a comfortable spot now in third, but also one of the biggest issues before he got there was defensively they were shambles. Mm-hmm. I mean, they conceded 6 goals in the first 2 games of the hex. I mean, they've only conceded 2 in the last 4. I mean, that includes going to Mexico City to play one of the best Mexico teams we've seen recently. I mean, this Mexico team is sort of taking the power back. I mean, there is talent there. I mean, there's talent there to really damage groups and, or damage teams in the group, and they have been.
And they were missing some key players in this game too, but they still were, you know, that still was a good side they put out there.
Yeah. So tactically, I thought Bruce Arena got it absolutely spot on.
So you're a fan of the three center backs?
I'm a fan of the three center backs. I absolutely am. And I thought Jeff Cameron had one of his best games I've seen him have in a U.S. jersey. Yeah, I like the back three.
We'll keep going.
Well, I guess that kind of takes me on to the
well,
next.
I do want to ask you one specific question before we go to the next topic. Mm-hmm. And just to the Mexico game, Kellen Acosta in central midfield with Bradley. Because in a previous episode, we talked about Jermaine Jones who's going to be injured, and how are they going to deal with it? And
do you remember what I said about Jermaine Jones? I said I think Jermaine Jones has played his last games with the U.S. team, mm-hmm. and they're going to begin to phase him out. Now, whether he plays again for the U.S., you know, there's a chance, but I think we're seeing that's coming to fruition.
I think so, too. I mean, you brought up in the Trinidad game, the one area that maybe looked a little weak was in central midfield because you had Pulisic coming in or Nagby. You know, Bradley didn't have that natural partner in there, it seemed like. But with Acosta, it seems like he does. And going back to the defensive part, I think that was a huge part in why they were pretty tough to break down defensively.
And if you remember, it was Acosta coming into the Trinidad and Tobago game mm-hmm. where they just locked things down because he offers athleticism, defensive positioning, responsibility, but also great attacking threat. I mean, he can strike a ball, great on a dead ball.
They were saying in training he was the best at taking free kicks.
I talked to some of the guys in the group, and they said when he'll have to battle Clint for mm-hmm. him a lot of times, but he can absolutely hit a ball, and I think you've seen him on not only attempts on goal, but also service into the box. He's the guy they're going with. So I don't mind the 4-4-2. I really don't. And I think in games where we want to dominate, where we think we can dominate, I love throwing out the 4-4-2. And I think Bradley and Pulisic can play together in a midfield four. The only problem is, and it started to happen in that Trinidad-Tobago game, if Bradley's not really on his game in terms of the tempo and his passing ability and his range, I mean, when he's on his game, Pulisic can stay a little further forward, and Michael Bradley can bring the game to the attacking players in those advanced positions. What was happening in Trinidad and Tobago was not only Pulisic dropping really deep, but Clint Dempsey also dropping really, really deep, which was isolating, Josie in that game with mm-hmm. Clint, isolating Josie a little bit and just breaking up the natural rhythm of the game. That was more first half. That was much better at the beginning of the second half. And then obviously, they get the goals, and then tactically, Bruce changes things to see the game out. So tactics, I think Bruce is getting it spot on. I think he's also showing that he has a more sophisticated tactical mind than people give him credit for, which moves us on to his tactical mind versus Jurgen Klinsmann's tactical mind. I saw all sorts of tweets after the first couple of games of Bruce Arena's tenure, and then even more so in the last two, about was this the right decision to put Bruce in place? Is this a departure from the ambition that Sunil Gulati and everyone showed by hiring Jurgen Klinsmann, or is this taking a step back to be able to move forward again? And my take on it is I like Jurgen Klinsmann, and I think Jurgen Klinsmann can be a great coach. My gripe always was Jurgen Klinsmann's not the tactician that's going to set up your team and execute through the week in training to give not only to create a game plan, but to make sure the right personnel are in the right places for that game plan, and the game plan is clear to all the players. And there were two players in particular after the game that I would say didn't mince words much and didn't really hide what their thoughts were on Bruce Arena versus Jurgen Klinsmann, and it was Omar Gonzalez and Michael Bradley. And let me read Bradley's. Michael Bradley said just after the game, at the end of last year, a lot of things started to drop for me. It was just a case at the end of last year where a few too many areas started to drop, and I think Bruce has done a very good job of coming in and little by little working at raising the level across the board. A big part of that idea, of this idea of team, of spirit, of mentality, of balls. So he kind of made it seem a little more on the motivational side mm-hmm. that Bruce came in and knew how to get the best out of the group. Omar Gonzalez kind of took a different more a different attack, I guess you could call it, at Jurgen Klinsmann and criticized his tactical side. So saying this is Omar Gonzalez after the game when Bruce Arena told me that we were playing in that system. I was a little bit nervous because of the way the last time turned out in Columbus. We prepared very well these last 2 weeks tactically, and it worked out great. Sometimes with Jurgen, you wouldn't know until the day of the game. It was just stressful. So with Bruce here taking that kind of approach, it's been helping out a lot. So let me go back to my criticism of Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen Klinsmann didn't have someone to do this for him like he had with Yogi Löw with Germany. And that was one of the biggest reasons they were failing. Jurgen Klinsmann has a tremendous amount of respect. He's very charismatic. He is good at motivating. Sometimes he tries strategies that I would call more European in terms of unsettling players and making the ground underneath them shaky to see how they respond. And I don't think he's wrong with that ultimately. Ostensibly, he's trying to raise the level of the players in a way that's worked with players he's had in the past. It's just a different group and a different landscape. So not sure if that was working. And if you go way, way back, I at halftime of an MLS game, criticized Jurgen Klinsmann by saying, I don't think he's got the right number two. And at that time, it was Martin Vazquez. I don't think he has the right number two to really optimize this group. And at the time, I couldn't say it. I had heard that from a lot of the players, and a few of them now are coming out and saying these things. And you understand why they didn't. They didn't want to disrupt the group. They didn't want to go off message. But then I went and saw for myself. I went and watched training sessions with the U.S. national team. I went out to California while I was living out in California. I went out to Home Depot. I went and watched a couple of their week sessions before games, and it confirmed what players were telling me, which is it was unclear. If no one told me how they were playing on the weekend, it was unclear based on that training what the strategy was for the weekend. So not only did the players, as Omar said, sometimes not find out how they were going to play until the day of the game, sometimes they didn't find out if they were actually going to play in the game until that day. And let me just contrast that with Bruce Arena. What did Bruce Arena do when we found out this after the Mexico game? One of the reasons we shouldn't have been surprised with all the changes is if we were actually in that inner circle and he did or told us what he told the players, which is in day one of the camp, he's playing two different groups, two different games, two different strategies, 4-4-2 against Trinidad and Tobago, and then he's going to play 3-4-3, 3-5-1 against Mexico and train these two different groups, mm-hmm. train them in those systems. That honestly right there is the crux of my issue with Jurgen Klinsmann's tenure. Is his strategy was, I'm gonna make this group uncomfortable. I'm gonna keep them guessing. I'm going to make them fight for their position. I'm gonna make them not know where they stand and see how they perform. And I think at the end of the day, although there were some good results and although there were some excellent results, it's a strategy that didn't work. And Bruce Arena is going back to what has worked for this U.S. team back when he coached them, their high watermark in the 2002 World Cup, a height that's never been reached since. But also the way he coaches with LA Galaxy and continues to win trophies this way, which is by letting everyone know, and I know this because I played for him, how you stand. Where do you stand? Bruce would sit you down and say, listen, you're not in the starting 11, here's why. You're not in the 18, here's why. You're starting today. Here's what I want. And then if you screw up, if you get the game plan wrong, you perform poorly, you know, you can't go in and say, listen, I was unclear. He told you exactly what he expected from you. So it creates this level of accountability where it's easy to see where things break down. And I'll point to another thing. Jurgen Klinsmann tried to grab a lot of power back. That move with Landon Donovan, I don't care how you try and break that down, was a power move. He brought Landon Donovan back into camp after there was already some friction between them, simply so he could show the rest of the group that he could dispose of him, that he could get rid of him before the World Cup because he is the boss. And that move, I think, honestly, backfired, even though they got out of the group of death, everyone wants to call it, even though it wasn't. But here's Bruce here, did this again with Tim Howard.
Mm-hmm. He went into sabbatical, yeah.
Did this with Michael Bradley by stripping him of the armband. Did this with Jeff Cameron by not playing him in his preferred position or not playing him at all or not even bringing him into camp. Now, those names I just listed are the of course, outside of Landon Donovan, although he was great in the booth with Stu Holden, those guys were the best performers during this cycle. I mean, mm-hmm. Tim Howard, excellent. Jeff Cameron, the best I've seen him play in a U.S. shirt, just bringing stability to that
back line. He was man of the match on Sunday against Mexico.
So good. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And I actually want to see him in the center of midfield at times, but hard to argue against playing him in a back line when he plays that good. Michael Bradley has the armband back, and I know people are always critical of Michael Bradley, and I just remain a huge fan of his, and I think our team doesn't succeed if he's not on the field. He is integral, absolutely integral. The other thing that Bruce Arena's done that's unlike Jurgen Klinsmann, that I actually tweeted out and actually went over a bunch of people's heads, so I'll explain it here, is I said two stars during this recent part of the cycle, Darlington Nagbe and Christian Pulisic, remind me so much of when Bruce grabbed Landon Donovan and Marcus Beasley off our under-20 team and made them stars at the end of a World Cup a cycle, and then started them in the first game of the World Cup, to everyone's surprise. Obviously, I don't mean because they're young. Darlington Nagbe's not young, mm-hmm. or because they play exactly the same way. There's many differences between DeMarcus Beasley's game and Darlington Nagbe's game. More similarities between Pulisic and Landon. But what I meant by that comparison is Bruce Arena's not afraid, I guess, to grab one young guy in Pulisic, as he grabbed two with Bees and Landon. But he's not afraid to, at the business end of World Cup qualifying, two guys that were overlooked, give them starring roles in the team and sit other guys that he's been counting on throughout that stretch. And it's going to lead to them qualifying for the World Cup. I mean, Pulisic and Nagbe in the last two games, Pulisic wasn't excellent in Mexico, and we'll get to that in a second, but he's been phenomenal. The best U.S. player through the hex since Bruce has been there. I mean, these are guys that were overlooked under Jurgen Klinsmann that are going to start in Russia.
The other thing I was just going to bring up that I think's gone, that I think goes along with your point here, that's gone under the radar a little bit from the Mexico game, is that in starting Bobby Wood, Ariola, Acosta, Yedlin, and Pulisic, he had four guys that are under 25. Wood's 24, Ariola's 22, Acosta's 21, Yedlin 23, Pulisic's 18. One of the biggest concerns for this national team going forward was that we're relying too much on our older players, and we don't have these young guys coming through. And we had five guys in arguably the biggest game of this, that we've had in a while, since the World Cup maybe, start and come through big. And it's also just a positive sign for the future that, like you said, he's gambling on these younger guys that maybe didn't get a call earlier. And they came through, and it's going to be good.
Totally.
Whether he's there in the long run or not, it's going to be good for U.S. national team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because Bruce is thinking to the future a little bit. He's thinking towards, even if he's not given the job after the World Cup or doesn't continue or isn't given another cycle or whatever the case, he's still trying to leave the team in better shape than he got it.
Keep going.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little more on Bruce. The Bruce is loose, so I've got to just get into this. But the other thing I thought was interesting that highlights Bruce Arena's managerial ability is there was a contentious moment in the Trinidad and Tobago game, a moment that could unsettle a group, a moment that could have been made a really big deal of that no one's really going to be talking about, although we are now. He subs Clint Dempsey out at a very important point in the game. Was that, I think it was at like the hour mark.
I think so, yeah.
It was somewhere along. Still plenty of game to be played. Still the game pretty much in the balance at that point. He subs Clint Dempsey off, and Clint Dempsey makes no secret of the fact he's furious he's being subbed out of that game, which, by the way, I have no issue with. I mean, I played with Clint with the U.S. team. Clint is a fighter, is a chip on his shoulder, I want to play every minute, I want to score every goal type of player. And I mean that in the positive version of selfish. He is the selfish that you want. He is the guy that just believes he can make the difference in every single game, and more often than not does. So he was pissed he was coming off. Bruce Arena offered him his hand. They exchanged some words. And I talked to some of the guys in the group, some of the guys I played with who are on the coaching staff now. And they said what I expected. Yeah, it was water on the bridge right afterwards. Because Clint Dempsey, if you go back, Clint Dempsey was given his chance with the U.S. national team by Bruce Arena. And Clint Dempsey was given a starring role with the U.S. national team by Bruce Arena. And then he and I, Clint and I, were coming up at the same time. We were first getting into those camps. We were in the January camps and right on the bubble at the same time. Obviously, Clint went off to do a lot more than I did. But you know, he respects Bruce Arena. I can confidently say that. And Bruce Arena respects the fight, the spirit that Clint Dempsey has. And so Bruce won't there wouldn't have been afterwards that don't embarrass me like that. You know, it would have been Bruce knows why Clint was pissed. Bruce expected Clint to be pissed, but Bruce knew what was needed in that moment of the game, makes a sub, and what happens, I don't even, minutes later, they go on and get the second.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the just to confirm, the substitution was 61st minute, and I think the goal came in the 62nd or 63rd. Mm-hmm. So,
which makes it easier to look back at Clint and say, all right, shut up.
Though that actually did bring – that brings up a point I wanted to bring up real quick, one more about Bruce, going back to the Mexico game with the sub. So some key players that weren't, and you mentioned Howard already and Clint. No John Brooks, mm-hmm. no Josie Altidore or Fabian Johnson, which he was actually the most surprising to me because I've always thought of Johnson as mm-hmm. arguably one of the more important because he can attack and defend. But so point being, those are five key guys that are left out. Is there a concern going forward that if he – and maybe this Mexico game is just kind of a one-off, mm-hmm. but that some of these guys are going to become disgruntled if they're not getting regular playing time?
No, it's a really good question because – going back to what I just said, Bruce would have clearly told them if not day one of the camp. I mean, he may have told them day one of the camp, you're not in the second game against Mexico. It's possible he would have said that. But if that's not the case, what he would have said is short recovery. This is how I'm going. You're still important. I mean, this is the biggest thing with Bruce. And I guess the biggest thing with managers that I consider to be good ones to play for that have that quality that makes them great managers, which is you're never guessing. You're never guessing how they think or what they think about you, how they feel. You know where you stand. And as a player, especially at that level, that's all you're asking for. All you're asking for is if I'm starting, tell me what you want. If I'm not, tell me what I'm not doing. That's it. And so, you know, I think Bruce would have communicated clearly to the guys that weren't playing, including Tim Howard. This is why I've made that decision. You know, one name I left out who had a great game as well is Omar Gonzalez. And speaking of communication and understanding how to manage a player, you can't underestimate the growing pains and the time spent together at the LA Galaxy with Bruce Arena and Omar Gonzalez. You can't underestimate the impact that has on how well Omar Gonzalez is performing for the U.S. national team. Another aspect is playing in Liga MX. I mean, playing at a very high level for a remarkable team that's very difficult to get into that starting 11. And there was a little piece, I think, that Fox did where Omar talked about that a little bit. So, you know, Omar Gonzalez, Jurgen Klinsmann wasn't a huge fan of his. So here, all of a sudden, guys that were underperforming to a certain extent, Jermaine Jones and others, are being taken out of the situation. And guys that weren't being given opportunities are performing at a really high level. I mean, that none of that is coincidence. So, yes, it's early. There's some big games coming up. And you know, the last games they have, the U.S. men's national team in the hex for these qualifiers, the biggest one's the next one, USA, Costa Rica at home. Then they go on the road to Honduras, then back home against Panama, and then the last one on the road to Trinidad and Tobago. The way things are set up, win two home games, win Costa Rica. I mean, that's a massive one. Mm-hmm. They win that one. They're in excellent position.
That's just the most interesting one, too, because they'll be at home where, you know, obviously going to Mexico, they had to be a little more conservative. You expect them at home against Costa Rica, despite losing 4-0 down there, to be a little bit more aggressive. So it'd be real interesting to see the lineup, the formation, tactics, everything he puts out mm-hmm. there, because is he going to play a little bit more conservative based on that 4-0 defeat earlier, or is he going to go for it a little bit and say, we need the 3 points, like you're saying?
And this just reminded me of something to go back to our last topic about Jurgen and Bruce. One of the things about Bruce that's so different is his understanding of the qualifying, his understanding of specifically on the road in World Cup qualifiers, what's going to happen. I remember, I think it was the first road game in the World Cup qualifying cycle last time around, not this time around, with Jurgen Klinsmann, where he even admitted he was surprised by the conditions. And that shocked me. I couldn't believe, A, that it did surprise him, but B, that he admitted it. That he admitted that the field and the atmosphere and the humidity and all these things surprised him. And I remember some of his players who are European-based struggled in the heat, struggled in that humidity. And he thought, you know, in hindsight, maybe that wasn't the right move. What do you mean in hindsight? You know, I mean, that, stuff like that, that's what really started to raise red flags early on in the Klinsmann tenure for me. And Bruce, and he knows exactly what – I mean, he knows what the locker room looks like. He knows that – you know, I remember we were playing in a World Cup qualifier at Saprissa, and, you know, Bruce mentioned mentioned to me because he knew I took too good care of my hair that he goes, Kyle, don't even bother – Kyle, don't even bother getting your hair all nice because when we're in the locker room – at Saprissa, all that plaster is going to fall in there anyway. And he was talking about how when at that stadium, which was one of the scariest stadiums I've ever played in, when the fans jump in the stands, it's right above our locker room. I think U.S. Soccer put out a video one time where you could see it. You could see the ceiling bowing, and plaster would fall off on your head. But Bruce, I mean, that's typical Bruce. And that's the other thing with Bruce is I think it's important to understand that players need – It's such a cutthroat, high pressure situation to represent your country and try to qualify for a World Cup and try to, you know, try to be a part of that group. I mean, it was the greatest honor of my life to be able to put on that U.S. jersey, and you know, it pains me I wasn't able to do it more. But I just feel so lucky that I got to do it for the times I got to do it. But so every now and then you need a manager that can take the pressure off a little bit. You know, a joke here and there, something that just lightens the mood. You know, and I think Bruce kind of has that balance down perfectly with the group.
Nice impression, by the way. That's almost as good as your Harry Redknapp.
I've got it down. Bruce and Harry Redknapp are the only two I've got down. I don't have anyone else. One pod, I will have to just do a pod that's a full-on discussion between Bruce and Harry Redknapp.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you're just going to do it all in the Harry Redknapp voice.
Okay, so...
Pulisic, right?
Let's move on to Pulisic. I kept trying to figure out what to tweet, right? You know, in the moments where this kid did something spectacular. And all I just kept saying is, the kid. Kid does again. Kid scores again. I keep calling him Boy Wonder. I mean... I talked about him as well on that first podcast. And if I remember correctly, what I was saying was offering that I think this is a really special talent, but trying to be a bit cautious.
Temper the expectations.
Yeah, not necessarily in the, like, avoiding the next Freddie Adu situation or something like that. I wasn't really worried about that. I think I said in that podcast, by the way, go listen to that one before this one. It would be the perfect pair. But, I think I said, you know, the guy's playing for Borussia Dortmund. I mean, regularly. He's playing in front of the yellow wall. I mean, pressure, you know, I mean, it would have already knocked this kid off his pedestal now if it was going to. So I'm not worried about that. I think I was getting upset at what I looked at as the discrediting some of these remarkable players we've seen over the years. And I think I referenced Claudio Reyna and John O'Brien and Landon Donovan. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's impossible to measure the impact Christian Pulisic has had in his short tenure at with the U.S. men's national team to what these guys have done over huge careers. So let's not even begin. I guess that's my thing. Let's not even begin comparing that, because what Landon Donovan's done, what Claudio Reyna's done for U.S. soccer is is above and beyond what Christian Pulisic has done. Having nothing to do with talent, just having to do with this is the beginning of his career.
Yep.
But talent. I mean, Landon said it on the first broadcast he did, covering Pulisic. It's clear now. This is the most talented U.S. player we've ever seen. This kid is incredible. He has a poise. He has an irreverence. He has a creativity that is remarkably rare in our country. Remarkably rare to be able to create a talent like this. And when I think – people ask me a lot. I played with Claudio. I played with Landon. And they ask me, you know, what made them so good? And, you know, Claudio Reyna, I think he went to University of Virginia for 4 years. I remember Claudio told me a story one time that after his freshman year, Barcelona actually came for him, and he didn't go. And I was talking to him about that because Benfica came for me right before I went to University of Virginia, and I didn't go. And we were kind of talking about, like, you know, what would have happened? Would that have made a huge difference in our development if we would have gone? And who knows? Because Claudio ended up at a very, very high level, even though he went to 4 years of college, which makes it so hard to understand why, because he wasn't in the best environment he could be in. He wasn't being pushed to the level he needed to be. But Christian Pulisic, at 15, I think, went over to Germany and got into one of the best youth academies, one of the best pipelines in the European game to create top-level talent. And in a very short time there, is now a regular for the first team for Borussia Dortmund. I mean, that statement alone, before we even get into the U.S. side of things, is remarkable. But going back to the development side of things, most of the work was done here. I mean, a kid from Hershey, you know, going through, I think, the residency program, is identified playing in one big game, the best game he's ever played in, against Brazil at the tournament down in Florida. The showcase, all the scouts were there, and Pulisic shows what he's capable of in the best possible way at the best possible time and gets that move. And Borussia Dortmund, by the way, weren't the only team with scouts there that went after this kid big after that. But it's so interesting because a lot of the work was done before that, and there was a great piece. I can't remember if it was Bleacher Report or someone wrote a great piece about Pulisic's rise and his development recently. And there were a couple things I took out of it that I thought, yeah, that's spot on. That's so good. One is how important, and his dad was a great soccer player. His dad was a professional indoor player. His mom was a great soccer player. She played D1, I think, for James Madison. I can't remember what school, but comes from an athletic family, not only athletic, but soccer based. Mm-hmm. They stressed to him, play in pickup games. You got to get away from all the organization and all the coaches and all the drills. You have to log hours just playing the game. That's where competitive spirit and creative ability is fueled. And I was like that when I was little. I would go play with the Jamaicans indoor with my buddy Edson Buttle. Here I am, scrawny little kid going with adults. These massive, very skillful, very physical guys in a gym that didn't give a crap that I was some young little scrawny kid. They'd kick me up into the bleachers if I sat too long on the ball. You know, I would pay money to go play in another indoor adult league. This was between my organized practices with my club team. So I love that the article highlighted that's something that's so important in this country that I hope we're not going to coach away. I hope it doesn't move towards you got to be there. There's got to be a coach. It's got to be drills. There's got to be sessions. It's got to be this whole structured system. That's important. Don't get me wrong. It's essential to be around good coaches and in good environments. But it's also essential to just go play. Go play and have fun. So that's one, I think, really important aspect. Another one that was touched on slightly is futsal. I mean, people might laugh at that a little bit, but futsal, when you watch South American teams, you'll see a lot of times, like one of my favorite players of all time is Juan Ramon Riquelme. He plays with the sole of his foot all day long. Coutinho now in the Premier League for Liverpool, sole of his foot. A lot of that tight control, that creativity and ability to unsettle someone off the dribble is from futsal. A lot of these guys, they all play it growing up. And you know, it's something I want to see, and it's starting to be incorporated more and more in U.S. soccer. I want to see every kid playing futsal. I mean, definitely in the winter in places where, you know, the weather is not conducive to being outside. But still, even in California, I know futsal courts are going up and people are starting to get into that. So that's important. But back to this kid, back to Pulisic. Let me just read the last 9 U.S. men's national team goals. Bradley's spectacular goal, self-made. The next 8, Pulisic goal, Pulisic goal, Pulisic goal, Pulisic assist, Pulisic assist with an asterisk. He drew a free kick that Dempsey put away. Right, yeah. Pulisic assist, Pulisic a goal, Pulisic assist. I mean, come on. This kid is performing not only at a high level where we see flashes of brilliance, but there's end product all the time. And that's one of the biggest reasons I say this kid's a talent unlike we've seen before, because I remember Landon, I remember Freddie. I played with both of them when they were younger. You know, Landon's the closest to this out of any of the young phenoms I've seen, where it's not just skill and talent and domination in youth tournaments. Like Freddie Adu dominated a youth World Cup, and that's where his prominence came from. He never really performed at a high level when I played with him with the full national team or even with DC United and the professional leagues. End product. So I've seen young talents that can dribble by a guy, that can put it through his legs, that can blow by someone. I mean, we see that all the time. But composure, picking the right pass in the final third, picking the right time to shoot, being able to finish chances that are likely goal scoring chances. I mean, that's the big difference. Yeah.
The right run to make. You kind of saw that on the first goal against Trinidad, where he just kind of waited. He kind of let the play Nagby. You know, Nagby had the ball and he waited for him to turn. And then we waited for Yedlin to come and he just was right in the right spot at the right time. And that's what you have to do sometimes.
And maybe that's like the confluence of what he developed in the States and what Borussia Dortmund gave him. Maybe that's where it comes together, is taking the phenomenal skill he has that was developed here. I mean, you get good on the ball at a very young age. The moves he has, Roger Bennett did this amazing video in the fall for Vice Sports where he goes over and talks with Pulisic, and there's some great home footage there. And this kid, when he was young, he had it all. He had the cuts, he had the moves, he was sharp. But putting that all together at the highest level when the pressure is on, to make the right pass, to make the right play, to finish the chance. Productivity is where someone goes from a great talent to a great player. And Landon Donovan had that. He did that. He did it at the highest level in a World Cup in 2002. I mean, he was incredible. Many wanted him to see it more. Many wanted to see him do it more. And I guess if you're trying to do apples to apples, he couldn't do it at Leverkusen when he went over as a youngster. And Pulisic is doing it in Germany. Now, there are many different factors that go into that I know about Landon since I've talked to him about it. But, you know, this kid, Christian Pulisic, is going to is a star. I'm not even going to say he's going to be a star. Is a star. And I honestly, like, this sounds hyperbolic, I feel fortunate that I'm here during his era in U.S. soccer, and I'm going to be able to watch it for many years, and I'm going to get to watch it with my daughter and my son, and get to, like many enjoyed Landon Donovan, like many enjoyed Claudio before him, like many enjoyed Hugo Perez before him, we're going to enjoy Christian Pulisic for a long time.
Couple quick questions. That was a whistle, obviously, but the one thing I noticed that I think he needs to work on is he's still a little scrawny. I think he needs to bulk up a little bit. I think he gets pushed off the ball too easily. But my bigger question for you, well, you let me know if you agree with that too, but what's his best position with this national team?
Good question. I'll take the first one first. I have a soft spot for scrawny because I was very scrawny, and Pulisic might actually have more muscle than I had. The only thing weighing me down was my hair back then. Yeah, it'll help. I mean, I remember that was a criticism of Cristiano Ronaldo, and I played against Ronaldo when he was 17, and he was scrawny. He was easy to knock off the ball.
Pulisic's only 18 right now.
Yeah,
so.
And Cristiano Ronaldo is built like Adonis now. I mean, the guy is absolutely ripped. He has like a 24-pack. So, yeah, that's important. Borussia Dortmund will be paying attention to that. He has to absolutely be getting as strong as he possibly can. But the best player in the world is a little shorter than him and isn't probably all that much stronger than him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't have to be a muscle man to be good at this game. His best position depends on what formation you're playing. I just want to see him on the ball regularly. So in a game where someone's crowding the center of the field and someone's trying to make it very difficult for us to play, I want to see him in a wide channel where he can get isolated 1v1. In an open game, you know, against Costa Rica, for instance, I want to see him in the middle of the park. I want to see him either playing ahead of Bradley and Acosta or with Bradley. I want to see him as a number 10.
Great. Yeah.
Let me just, before
Let's
we
wrap
go,
up real quick,
yeah, wrap this up. So one topic that we've been talking about, and then we got to get out of here because the next pod's coming in. The VAR. VAR, I like it. I want it in the game. There was a big VAR decision in France, England the other day, and Varane got sent off. Hard to know how it was used. VAR, it only took 30 or 40 seconds for them to make the decision. It seems that the decision was on the penalty, but not the offside before that. So let's just concentrate on the penalty. So the decision seemed initially, in live action, the referee had a yellow card out. He was going to give a yellow card to Varane. For the new double jeopardy or triple jeopardy, if you want to call it, rule for the penalty is if you try to tackle the ball and you tackle a player in the box, you can give a yellow card for it, but you can't give a red. It's a penalty, and that's it. If you're not attempting to play the ball, so if you just egregious or flagrant, completely wild challenge to take someone down with no attempt to play the ball, then you can give a red card for that. Where the rule gets gray, and referees admit this, is in what happened with Varane, where you're kind of trying to get out of the way But you clip his heels accidentally, which, by the way, is still a penalty. As a defender, if an attacking player is cutting across you, it's your responsibility to make sure contact doesn't happen, because the attacking player has the advantage. They're in behind you. The next thing they're going to do is shoot. You can't touch that guy. So this is that weird situation where I want to see a yellow card there. I don't want to see a red. You know, it's accidental contact, but based on how the rule's written, VAR got that spot on. I see a lot of people criticizing VAR after that. No, don't criticize VAR. Criticize the rule, because VAR got it spot on. They went back and only took half a minute to make that decision. They they communicated to the referee. They gave a red card, and by they communicated, it's one referee watching on a TV up in a booth or in a truck. He communicates through a headset to the head referee. Referee says, okay. The video says it's a red card. I'm given a red card. But here's the thing, is none of the players argued, right? I mean, people didn't go crazy. They didn't crowd the referee. It didn't take 5 minutes, as it would have if he would have given a red initially. So a little update on VAR. I like it. I think it's working, but it's going to be used in the Confederations Cup. So we'll see over the length of a whole tournament if it's the real deal, if it's going to help the game. This is it, guys. This is our last Tad Pod before the season starts. So we're going to go on a little bit of hiatus. Have a wonderful break. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And while you're out there barbecuing and sitting in the sun, stay on your feet.